there, I'm board-certified professional organizer Kathy Burns. I'm really glad you're here. This podcast is designed for busy entrepreneurs just like you who want to take better control of your business and move forward with less stress and more success. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Organize Energize podcast is produced for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at thepodcast.organizeandenergize.com. Come back often and feel free to add this podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Organize Energy and Facebook. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hi, everyone. This is Kathy with Organize and Energize. Don't you know, since you're here, today I'm going to talk with Rob Burns. He's a man after my heart, been around him for a few years, actually married for quite some time. And I wanted to introduce you to him because he's a storyteller from way back. And as entrepreneurs, we need to learn how to use stories and storytell within our businesses. And Rob's a master at that. He's a documentarian and owns treehousestudios.studio, where he produces documentaries for nonprofits. And he's in the process of creating another movie called What is Manifesting, the movie. So let's jump into the conversation and let's learn about how to do storytelling with Rob. Hey everyone, this is Kathy and I'm back, and I am here with someone I've known for quite a little bit of a time. His name is Robert Burns and he is a storyteller from way back. And I wanted to have him on the podcast because he knows a lot about telling stories, spinning yarns, and creating engagement with your audience. And as entrepreneurs, we all want to do that. So welcome, Rob, to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Yeah, also we know each other a little bit more just because we've been married for what, 30 something years? So,
yeah, 30 something years. You know, after doing 100 podcasts, I figured I might as well have my honey on. And, you know, people really, I'm in a long training program for storytelling, and I thought that you were the perfect person to interview to talk about storytelling and spinning a yarn. So, talk to me a little bit about your background, Rob, and why you're doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, you know, it's been an evolution. I mean, I've been on the marketing side doing copywriting and marketing, you know, marketing, copywriting and things like that for probably, 25 plus years, something, something in that. And really, for me, I really wanted to evolve and focus more on the creative side as opposed just to kind of this strict technical marketing aspect. And so it's been kind of a gradual movement going that direction. And storytelling was always, I've always been under the premise that everything is a story. I mean, if just one picture, you know, that whole adage, a picture is a thousand words, and all that good kind of stuff. So if you look at under that lens, then almost everything you do is a story, and then you can start framing your work that way. And so a great reason from the marketing standpoint that stories are so great is it really kind of lets you know who that person is, so people buy from you when they know, like, trust you. And so, and from our earliest days, storytelling was really how we communicated things and let people know about different things. Like, you know, hey, we were foraging over in that valley, and then all of a sudden, a lion showed up, you know. So, and then there was a whole story about the lion encounter and so things like that. So that's really kind of why I gravitated towards storytelling. So.
Yeah. It's like the hieroglyphics in the cave, right? It's like, oh, okay. Beast.
Right.
Beast. Ooh, captured. Ooh.
Who captured who, or how this, some story of a great hunt, or, things like that. And then because those were the things that were important in those days. And so they were really kind of the first marketing pieces, I guess, if you really want to,
Absolutely. You know, I remember, you know, back then it was like word of mouth or pictorial. And then I remember when I was in advertising a long time ago that, you know, the advertorial that it had the picture that I'm sorry, that had the story about the owner was way more effective than just the ad, because people want to know who that person is that they're going to do business with. And they remember stories. Now we flash forward, you know, a couple decades, and now we're in video. And so I know video is your game now. So talk to me about a story of one of your clients that you did a documentary for. What happened with the storytelling of that?
Yeah. So I do primarily documentaries now, and I still do some marketing work and brand stories or founder stories, things like that. But primarily it's documentaries. And when I work with nonprofits, they have, something called a gala video, and it's usually once or a couple times a year for their fundraising, and it's telling their story, and it's really the perfect piece where people can know, like, trust and understand what that nonprofit's about, and then if you do the film right, it makes a connection between the person watching the film, the nonprofit, and whatever that cause is for the nonprofit. And so in the case of, I think you're probably talking about the Humble Design one.
Yeah. The Humble Design. Yeah. One. Awesome.
Yeah. So that one was great because and it was really interesting because I was, when we first started talking about it, I was semi not interested in it, because what Humble Design was, they were a group of interior designers, and they had this big warehouse full of furniture, and then people that were unhoused, they would go in when they got reintroduced to housing, they would go in and furnish these new places. And I learned so much about that whole world. And I think most of the times when I work with nonprofits, it's almost, you know, I'm learning as much as I'm creating a film. And so some of the things I learned were that, so in San Diego, this is, we did for their San Diego chapter. I think at the time there were about 9,800 people that were homeless, and about 2 to 5% of the homeless people you see on the street, those are typically the people that are the stereotypical homeless people, where, you know, they have a tent on a sidewalk, or they're sleeping on a sidewalk, and that kind of thing. But that's only 2 to 5% of the homeless people, and those are usually people that were probably suffering from PTSD or addiction or have mental struggles, things like that. And so they just kind of, that's really, you know, where they're at. And they did, you know, they're not even at a place where they could try to find housing, kind of thing. The majority of homeless people are people where they were just one paycheck away, and something happened, and now they're living in their car, or they're couch surfing, or they're had abuse issues or things like that, you know, that they were trying to get away from. And that's the majority of those people. And then the other thing I learned is in San Diego, it's about 11 years before you can get housing. So, wow. And then what really sold me on Humble Design was the fact that, that the attrition rate for somebody that finally does get reintroduced to housing is about 90%, because they would go and they would get a place, and it was just a box, and there was nothing in it. And so they didn't, they were like, well, it's, you know, this isn't any different than when I was homeless, and there were no options. And so with Humble, they would make a house a home. And yeah. So, and some really big things came out of it. So one of the things was, now moms have a kitchen that's stocked where they can cook real food. And mm-hmm. So now, instead of buying Mick food from a food desert, which is the least expensive, but probably the worst, you know, worst health wise for you. Now they can actually cook real meals. And then kids have beds to sleep in and desks to study on. And then part of the story, so one of the people that were actually in Humble Design, she actually was incarcerated for 15 years and then got out, and then she had two kids, and they were living on the street. They got put into housing, and Humble was there. She was like one of the very first people that Humble had helped quite a while ago. And so now one of their kids is an architect, and the other kid I think is going to school for physics. So and none of that could have happened if they were just living in a car or just didn't have the resources. And so those kids, they got a good night's sleep, and not only that, but they decorated it so it kind of fit in with whoever the person was. Like there was another person who they were from Hawaii, and so they decorated the whole place in a Hawaiian theme, and so they have actually like real furniture manufacturers and people that donate, and so it's really nice. So it's really a home, and so the attrition rate for Humble people that for Humble Design that they go through is only 5%. So only 5% of people wind up going back to being homeless. And so it really did make a huge difference. And so that whole thing was a giant learning process for me, which I love. And so, how the storytelling aspect went was really connecting the mission of what Humble does and why it was important, and then showing these people like how it changed their lives and how it actually really did good. And so that for me was just kind of a just the best of everything kind of deal. So
yeah, and I know with what I found the most astounding as you work through that whole project is not realizing that when homeless get housed, they basically just have a bag of stuff. That's all they have. And so they get into this apartment that's empty before Humble gets, you know, unless they're a Humble client, then they just have a box. And like you say, a bag of clothes, maybe some old ratty clothes. And so Humble will come in and actually design it. Now, I know after the gala video or after the video that you produced called Home, by the way, and we'll put the link down below if you guys want to watch it. It's an amazing movie about the homeless and about Humble. After they released that gala video, I know that they got a lot of revenue during a few galas in a row just by someone telling their story. Heartfelt, people are crying. I remember that a lot of people were crying, not realizing, what it's all about, to be homeless. And they raised quite a bit of money, just from that one video.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you want to give numbers, but like the first time it was a good six figure sum just from the premiere. And then they did two or three more events that were where they showed the video to use it as a tool. And, you know, they were kind of in that range too. So it's really cool. And really it's like Humble is a perfect example of why a story can really be so effective. Because I think if somebody, like when I was first talking to him, I was honestly just pretty disinterested. I was just like, this is, you know, I'm thinking, how is this going to save the world or fix climate change or solve people's problems? Or, you know, it's just decorators. And I personally couldn't get past it. And until I really started doing a deep dive with them on what it was about and how it does affect changes. And then I was just completely sold. And I think that's, you know, that is the power of the story, is the story made that connection, and it connected with me, where I was just like, this is super important, you know. And now, you know, and it showed why was it important, how did it help, all of those things that we want to know. And it made a connection, you know, it made this heartfelt connection between the viewer and Humble Design and the people that were in the film.
Yeah, and I think the plus side of it, they got more clients, they got more sponsors, they got more volunteers. Mm-hmm. you know, they probably are getting more grants because they're more, you know, they're more phrase forward. You know, they're in, what are they in, four different cities in the Eight U.S.? Now.
Yeah.
They're in what?
Eight.
Eight cities in the across the U.S. is Humble Design. So they're expanding. So yeah. That is the power of storytelling. Now, as entrepreneurs, I think it's so very important that we tell our own story. I work a lot on, you know, my background, why I do what I do. People love to hear why we're doing what we're doing. And so you're doing these founder stories. Can you talk about those just a little bit? Because I think everyone needs a founder story, and video obviously is the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. And really the trick is it's not really about the subject of the story. It's about the person that's watching the story. Because if you do a story and it's just about, you know, me and why I'm so great and how successful I am and how I can make you successful or whatever, that kind of thing, people are just bored. But if they can see a little piece of themselves in that person that is the subject of the story, then it's just infinitely more effective. And that's really the goal. And so with the founder stories, because there's a lot of people that are, say, speakers or authors or experts or you know, their personality is connected to the brand. And even sometimes just the story of a brand. Mm-hmm. And then really that's the goal is you make that connection and you try to, depending on what it's about, to make an emotional connection. So that person at bare minimum relates to the founder and the founder story. And, you know, best case scenario sees themselves as part of it and can really, you know, as part of that tribe and makes that connection.
Yeah, I think it comes down to vulnerability, you know, saying who you really are. And these are my faults. And people are like, yeah, I feel like that too, you know, and that's very important.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, how many times have you seen, you know, an ad or a story and it's, you know, some guru selling something and it's just about how awesome they are and how they're living their best life. And like a lot of times that'll just create anxiety for me. I'm just like, you know, like, you know, this is just, and they make it so that they're just kind of the, you know, they're framed themselves are kind of that at that pinnacle, you know, unachievable to most people. And then it'll just kind of throw in and you can do it too kind of thing. And everybody says like, no, but you know, if you talk about somebody that has become very successful, and they start out the story, they were living in their car or, you know, and my rule is you just have to be 100% integrous as far as like what I'm telling the story. Like, I'm not going to make up a story for somebody and I'm not going to try to find something that's not there, because it doesn't do anybody a favor. It doesn't do the person that's making the video and it just won't work. So, but everybody has a story and everybody has that hero, you know, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey where, you know, they started out and then they had this mission or this goal that, you know, they were just a regular person. And then this thing happened to them. And so to put them on this journey and maybe they had a little bit of success and then they just, then all of a sudden failure just, you know, just sideswiped them. And then they figured out, you know, the whatever the dilemma was and the great battle of, you know, whatever, whether, you know, some, you know, maybe some mental internal battle that they had, and then it was success. And then people can relate to that because people, there's very few people that just aren't struggling. And if you can relate to those people and then show that there is a path and it, you know, it's a real path and that they can understand it, then that's going to really, you know, make a huge difference. And that's where kind of the secret sauce is.
Yeah, I love that. And you're a master storyteller. And I think that, you know, a lot of it, you know, I think that's why Instagram and all that, you know, people are walking around talking, showing people their life. that's also a resonation. You know, you're like, oh, okay. I mean, sometimes, unless you're a douchey, right? But walking around saying, here I am doing this and doing that. But having an actual founder story produced is a notch up, because it's elevated to the whole hero's journey, as opposed to just being little snippets of someone's life, so to speak.
Yeah, like a 5 to 15 minute video, but you shoot it like a movie, and it's a real story. So it has this, you know, this cinematic emotional effect on people, and that really is what really works, and that, you know, it sets it aside. I think, you know, I think that the social media stuff where people are less than perfect, I think it is actually more effective than people with the perfect bodies or the, you know, driving a Lambo or because I think there's so much of that it just creates anxiety in people. And there's a lot of stuff coming out about that on social media where people are just like, all these people are just living their best life and they're just, and look, you know, look at me, you know, kind of thing. But being a real person and being relatable is much more powerful. And even in the films where people that are kind of, you know, a founder story or a brand story where it's a speaker or an author or a person that's part of their brand, where they show their vulnerabilities and they show their failures and they show how they overcame those. And that's what people want to see, because they want to know it's a real person they're buying from, not just, you know, some person just mimicking copy that they think will sell.
And that's so funny, because, you know, that's the whole reason that I do this podcast, is to let people know that they're not alone, that we all do the ups and downs. We all do the zigzags. Life is never perfect, right? But we rise above. And how do we do that whenever, how do we overcome challenges? And, you know, that's the whole idea behind Organize and Energize the podcast, quite honestly. This reminds me, as you're speaking, Rob, I just keep thinking of Southwest. It just keeps blowing in my mind. So as you know, I love Southwest. I've always really loved Southwest. They've always taken good care of me, always taking care of me. But I remember watching the movie about the founder of Southwest. And it was his hero's journey, why, who he is. He would talk to everybody. I mean, they showed all of his flaws and blemishes, and they had to really reel him in, because, you know, he would never be on time for meetings because he was always chit-chatting with people on the way, and they'd have to wrangle him in. And it really, and then, you know, the whole airline was built on love, because the guy was love personified. And that made me even more loyal to Southwest, because, and you know, they have the heart. So it's like the whole story, I didn't know about the founder. I didn't know why there was a heart in Southwest. Now I know the whole story, and now I'm loyal, or, you know, I'm the loyalest probably person ever for Southwest. I would always fly them if I had an option. And it just drove it in even closer to me, to my heart, by knowing why he's there and who this guy is.
Right. Well, it's Southwest is a perfect example. So if you remember, during COVID, we started watching that whole series, The Kindness Diaries, with Leon Lagothis. And Leon Lagothis was this guy, and it was perfect timing, because, you know, it was during lockdown, and you know, you watch the news for 5 seconds and you're like, oh man, the world's just burning down and everybody hates each other, and it's just all this, just, you know, just polarity, and people are just like that, and it was just it was depressing. And this whole series that was on Netflix, Leon would basically, and he was pretty wealthy. I think he made his money, he was like an investment banker or something in England, and then he just kind of gave it up, but he kind of made his money. And so he started doing this series, and he would show up each season, like one part of the world. Like one part, I think he did from he drove all the way from Argentina to Los Angeles. And the rule was like, he had a VW Bug, like an old 67 or 60, you know, six VW Bug. And it was named Kindness One. And it's kind of a long story, but there's a good point to it. So the rule was he couldn't accept any money. The only thing he could accept from people was food, fuel, lodging or assistance, but no money.
No money.
And so he would just travel, you know, and he would just run up to these people and was like, hey, you know, could I stay at your house or what, you know, this, that, you know, that kind of a deal. And the people that he did stay at, they were just, they would just have these amazing stories. There was this one guy, I can't remember, in one part of Central America, where this guy lived in a box, and, you know, and he's like, hey, I don't have anything, but, you know, you can share this side of the box, and, you know, it's safe, you know, it's not safe to be out, you know, around, and you can just sleep, you know, sleep here with me, and here's half of my food and this, that. And the thing is, and then at the end, Leon would actually help these people out. Like he would, like, I think he bought the guy a house or something afterwards, you know, kind of like, and they knew nothing about him. And so that was the story. And so kind of a long story short, to connect Southwest is Leon actually did a Kindness Diaries initiative with Southwest. And so Southwest had this whole web series where, you know, Southwest was kind of the sponsor, but he would do, you know, he would do kind of his Kindness Diaries thing. And so that I think is like a perfect example. And it's like just perfect because it's not, you know, sometimes people try to kind of do virtue signaling or this or that, but it was kind of this perfect connection of this guy that actually did these things in Southwest who thought that was kind of cool. And so that's, you know, a great kind of a win-win connection where they're connecting stories and empathy and a huge brand. So
I didn't even realize that. That's interesting. Yeah. That went way past me. But yeah, I think that's the thing, empathy, right? And mm-hmm. people can't empathize unless they can relate. And people yeah. can't relate unless you show who you really are. And being vulnerable is where it's really at. And I think it, you know, in any kind of sales, you're out there listening, right? Anybody you speak with that's a potential client or a potential partner, if you're just who you are and you're real, they're either going to resonate or they aren't. And more than likely they will resonate because they will, again, be able to empathize and say, oh yeah, I feel that way too sometimes.
Right? Yeah. I think that's spot on. And really for two reasons, you know, one is, you know, as I'd mentioned that, you know, don't try to, you know, act fake compassionate, or don't try to create this story or virtue signal because people will spot that off in just 1 second, you know, in one se- and then it's worse than if you were just like a, hey, buy my stuff kind of person. Mm-hmm. So the message has to be real and the story has to be real. And I promise you, everybody has a message and a story that'll connect. And then the other thing is too, is if you do manage to pull it off and you kind of create this whole scenario because you're trying to fit in with this certain group of people that's really not you, that's just a huge recipe for failure too, because I think the people that don't drink your Kool-Aid are just as valuable as the people that do, because those are the people that you'll get started in something and then it just doesn't work out. And then it just doesn't resonate. And then you just put so much time and energy and people think I'm crazy all the time because I'll just be kind of like, you know, and you're like, well, this is just this huge opportunity. And we had that talk earlier of, you know, where somebody was trying to connect me with this other just kind of huge group. But I was just like, I just know, man, if I get involved with that, it's just not, I know me, you know, and it's not going to work. And I'm, you know, my value system didn't fit in with that value system. And I'm not judging that value system. I'm just saying for me, it didn't resonate and it's going to show. Like for me, I'm the worst person in the world to have a fakey face. Cause like you're going to tell like exactly what's on my mind. So I think, you know, be you. And the thing is too, you have to think when the internet came out, there were a couple billion less people on Earth. So there's so many people, and there's so many people now that are on the internet that are involved, that no matter who you are, there's going to be somebody, there's going to be more than enough people that are going to fit into that tribe. So don't try to be something you're not, just be you, and you're going to be infinitely more successful and you're going to tell better stories and you're also going to filter out those people that are not, you know, resonant with your message.
Yeah, and it goes back to a few podcasts back, we were talking about avatars, you know, and I spent so many thousands of dollars trying to figure out who my avatar is, and really who my avatar is me. And yeah. People that resonate with me are going to be the people that are my clients. And if you're out there listening, you know, your avatar is you. Someone who is interested in what you're interested in, someone who thinks like you think, because you're going to resonate, you're going to empathize with each other, you're going to be able to grow together. And, you know, if you have, you know, you try to fit into this other crowd, you know, the clique, so to speak, it probably isn't going to work in a long-term haul. It might work, I mean, you know, might work quickly for a little bit, but it will fade away. So I think that's great. So this is my question of the year for this podcast is, when you have a success, Rob, how do you celebrate success?
Usually with my beautiful wife.
So. That was a setup. No.
So, well, and that's actually pretty much pretty true. So, you know, for us, it'll be maybe we'll go on an adventure or go sit under some trees or cactuses or, you know, things like that. And really just kind of spend time being grateful for whatever that success was for. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think stopping and spending time for sure. Yeah. So, okay. So we have to talk about organizing a little bit. You're super organized. What's your favorite organizing hack or system that you use?
I'm a big fan of round filing.
The circular can system.
Yeah, it's a circular can system. And I am, I try with as much diligence as I can to not let things stick to me as far as stuff. I'm kind of an anti-stuffist. As you know, before we were married, I think I had a futon mattress and a set of chef's knives and you know, yeah. And my clothes. And I was, you know, I was happy as a clam. So for me, I don't need to accumulate a lot of things. Just maybe an awesome wife. And
that's helpful for me. You know, I am the collector, of course. I'm the, he married me and he got the stuff. That's the story.
Lots of bargains. Yeah. Bargains everywhere.
That's funny. Yeah. But I know that you like Workflowy and I like Trello. Oh,
yeah.
And,
so it's tools. You know, go ahead.
Yeah. Talk to me about Workflowy. For those of you out there, I love Trello because it's visual and it's like little post-it notes and that keeps me organized. But Workflowy, some people out there might really resonate with this. So talk about Workflowy just for a sec.
Yeah. Workflowy is really interesting because most people don't like it because when you first look at it, you're just like, it's so simple, but that's really the beauty of it. And Workflowy is where, really you can kind of create these tasks and these lists and subtasks and sublists, and they all kind of drop down and I've literally mapped out just super massive, just kind of complicated projects or systems like I do a lot of SOPs using Workflowy, an entire film I use Workflowy for. And what's great is because you can look at just certain sections and you can expand and collapse and you can do things like you could tag. So in the film, there's all these people that are doing all these different things. And so you can like hashtag a name or at symbol a name, and you can put it next to that task. And then you can actually just click on that name. And then it shows all the things inside a Workflowy that are related to that person or that task. And so it looks really simple, but probably the most complicated, just integral things that I've done, I've used Workflowy for. So, and it's like $5 a month or something. It's ridiculous. So,
yeah. Yeah. You use it really brilliantly and you can put a lot of stuff in there. So check out Workflowy if you're looking for task management or actually for assignment management to know who's doing what and when. And if you get overwhelmed by looking at gigantic lists, you can break it down and only look at one thing. So
yeah, project management. So
if you could turn back in time, Rob, and tell your 18-year-old self something, what advice would you give him?
I would say don't be afraid to fail, because that's the fastest path forward. So,
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, so I know you probably have a valuable free resource that you could offer people. Is there anything that you would want to offer? Do you have a link? Or I know we're going to drop the home video in there, and so that you can watch, you know, what a little mini gala documentary, and actually you get really you'll become very educated about the homeless, not just here in San Diego, but all over the world, and who they are and why they're there. A lot of very surprising things that you don't really understand about them. But if you have anything else that you want to provide, then we'll go ahead and drop the link below. I see you thinking, so you might.
Yeah. I'm so busy doing projects these days. I'm not really, like, I don't have any kind of email capture or anything like that kind of deal. But I mean, anybody that might be interested in films, or if they want to just kind of see how, you know, I structure things, because most of the things I do are pretty short. So you can kind of see like a 5 minute story, like we did the Grandma Sparky one, you know, and that was like five or 8 minutes. And you could go to treehousestudio.studio. And then if you look at the artwork section, you can kind of check it out. And so, and if you're interested in maybe having a brand story or something like that, yeah, just go to there and just reach out. And
perfect.
Rob at treehousestudios.studio. And that's another way. And it's plural.
You got it. Well, guess what? We're at the end, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to interview you, but I felt a little bit weird because you are my husband and my honey, but I know that there's a lot that can be learned from storytelling, and I hope you folks have enjoyed this episode. Think about a story for yourself. What is the story that you tell? Are you vulnerable? Are people able to empathize with you? Or are you just being like the bright, shiny, perfect person? Like, that's not what you want to be, right? So thanks for having you on the show. Thanks for coming, Rob.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And until next week, we'll see you then. Take care. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to hear more, feel free to subscribe on the platform of your choice. Also, if you feel so inclined, I would truly appreciate a good rating from you to me. Have a stellar day.